This is an extract from the Nature podcast. For the full show, go to nature.com/podcast.
The city of Flint, Michigan, is nowadays probably best known for the water crisis that began in 2014.
Water was coming out yellow and brown from faucets. I myself drank water a few times, and it was like, it would pretty instantly give you a stomach ache.
Immediately, you could see the discoloration in the water, or you could smell the odors in the water and the feel of the water.
The reason why the water had become so obviously bad was due to a cost-cutting decision to change the supply of water from Lake Huron to the Flint River. A seemingly simple decision to cut costs had devastating consequences for the population of Flint. In addition to the contaminants discoloring the water, it also contained toxic amounts of lead from the city's aging pipe network. While at first officials denied that the water was unsafe, several groups of researchers documented the extent of the contamination in the water, eventually causing the authorities to concede that there was a problem. After more than a year of contaminated water, the water supply was switched. Researchers are the presumed heroes of this tale, the ones that got accountability from officials. However, that belies the efforts that the people living in Flint went to in order to raise the alarm, as Yvonne Lewis, a longtime community advocate, explains.
Well, residents actually took bottles of water to make it known to the leadership that there was a problem here.
Despite this, she says the residents' voices weren't heard by the people in power.
However, they were heard loud enough for researchers and even the popular media to come to the city to see for themselves and to hear the concerns that the residents were raising. But sometimes when it got to the real scientific kinds of questions, the voices of residents were not respected in the same way because we didn't speak the same language as the scientists spoke.
Research community collaborations are not always easy, as Yvonne alluded to. But in the end, the problems Flint was facing only came to light due to the efforts of both scientists and community members. And this isn't the only example. Public health researchers often come to Flint with the best intentions to work on various projects. But a lack of consideration of what the community may bring to a scientific project risks causing resentment. In fact, Yvonne has also experienced outright dismissal from scientists.
When I didn't have a medical background, when we were talking about medical issues, then I was actually dismissed from the table while actually sitting at the table. When I'm inquiring about how community members were identified and how they were categorized as being uncaring, unconcerned about their own health and well-being, I asked a question, who are you actually talking about? Because this is not the attitude that's reflected among all the members of our community. And so one of the researchers asked me what my background was, my academic background. And when I said I had a bachelor's in business administration, the comment was, okay. And then they turned from me and began to talk amongst themselves more about the project as if I was no longer sitting at the table.
So how do you make an effective community research collaboration? For Rick Sadler, an academic who's been working with the community in Flint on public health projects, part of it is being humble. So don't make assumptions.
Honestly, I feel like it's embarrassing for researchers when they come in and propose something and the community says, we've already done that, or we don't want that, or you're not accounting for these five issues.
Yvonne, in fact, says she's experienced occasions when researchers have been speaking about Flint without having visited it. They then made assumptions about the people living there, for example, that all minorities within Flint are in poverty. In contrast, Rick has found that projects have worked best when they've had input from the community.
One of the projects I got involved with was going to create a local food app. So an app that would provide more localized information about the retailers and the restaurants and grocery stores that sold healthy food. And the focus group participants marked up a map highlighting places that they both like to shop and specifically avoid shopping. And what it wound up giving us was a kind of a qualitative, quantitative mashup where I took the places they had all circled and I superimposed them onto each other. And then from that group came up with a generalized area where people did or didn't like shopping. And we learned from that people who were living in some neighborhoods didn't like shopping in their own neighborhoods. And some of the reasons they had cited included that they didn't feel safe shopping in these stores, but also that the stores didn't have quality food. So it kind of painted a picture of food access that was more nuanced than just me plopping grocery stores on a map and saying, oh, look, you have fine food access.
Yvonne also believes that projects work best when community members are involved. In fact, them having a role in the design of experiments can be especially valuable.
When we're engaged early on, we have opportunities to look at what those differences are, those nuances might be, that could challenge or either improve the research if we're working together. And ultimately, the goal is, are we doing work collectively that is going to improve the quality of life for the residents in the community?
Both Rick and Yvonne believe that it's important to put enough time to allow the relationships between researchers and the community to flourish in the long term. However, the nature of scientific work can constrain researchers. They may need to quickly publish a paper or write the next grant. Do these demands allow for the long-standing relationships to be forged? Well, for Rick, keeping the community in mind is important for every step.
When we write grants, a lot of times we have the community partners right there with us. They may not write 50% of the grant, but maybe they write 25% because the type of work we're proposing requires that community engagement.
Yvonne, as a community advocate, gets the demands of scientific work too. And she suggests talking to the community about it.
One of the things that we have come to terms with is that we have to understand what those conflicts are. And so often we talk about, let's set realistic expectations. Help me as a community member understand what your challenges are. What are the requirements? What do you need to get your goals accomplished? And then let me tell you what my expectations are and what my needs are as a community member to have good quality outcomes for the community. Because what we do understand is research is necessary.
The key to any relationship is communication, and community research partnerships are no different. And that relates to the language used as well. Research is famed for its acronyms and jargon, and this can form barriers. Even the context can cause confusion.
And so even though we both might be saying public, we may have different understanding of what that means. For me as a community member, when I say public, I'm thinking about all the people that live in the houses and walk in the streets and engaging. When another discipline may be talking about public, whether it be from an engineering science perspective, maybe from an ethics science perspective, that definition of public could be very different and could be only a particular segment of the community.
Fundamentally, building a relationship with a community or them with researchers is the same as any other. It needs time and respect. Researchers need to consider community members right from the inception of their ideas. They need to talk to them, spend time with them, and don't come in with assumptions about who they are. Research can really benefit many communities. Flint is still coming to terms with the water crisis, and the long-term health effects are not known at this point. Research will hopefully continue to help the citizens of Flint, and many communities beyond. So it's something that's worth getting right. Thank you.
That was Nick Petridge-Howe. For this piece, he spoke to Rick Sadler from Michigan State University and E. Yvonne Lewis, who is the Director of Outreach for Genesee Health Plan in Flint, Michigan, and CEO of the National Center for African American Health Consciousness. For more on community-based research, check out the comment article written by Rick and Yvonne, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes.